You are listening to the Experience Points Podcast, episode number 159 for the week of February 15th, 2012. Welcome back to the Experience Points Podcast. My name is George Albor.
I'm Scott Juster.
And we are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, where we write and podcast about games and culture. And today, this podcast is inspired by an article written by Sean Elysium Sands of Gamers with Jobs. And this article is called The Noise and the Fury. And this article is about the way that, as fans of any particular entertainment medium, we often get very excited and very offended by some of the things that happen in the industry or in the community of which we are a part of. He starts this article with a conversation, actually, about the recent American Super Bowl game, the American football game that is watched by, I think it's, as far as I understand, it's the most widely viewed sporting event in the United States every year, right?
I mean, yeah, it's up there. And, I mean, other than the World Cup, I mean, it's pretty much the sporting event.
Right. So if you haven't been watching or keeping up with football, this last game was the New England Patriots versus the New York Giants, and the Giants won out, beat the Patriots. And, of course, a lot of people were upset. To give an example, on my way home from watching the game with Scott, actually, I saw a young woman walk out of Walgreens. She had bought a package of cigarettes to drown her sorrows, and she was wearing a Patriots jersey, and she was just openly weeping. She was just bawling in public, sitting by the trash can in the cold weather in her jersey, just smoking a cigarette while presumably her boyfriend just sat and watched a good, 2 meters away.
Yeah, safe distance.
Yeah, and it's funny because I look back on that and I was thinking, wow, you must really like football, or specifically, you must really like the Patriots. And it's really bizarre sometimes when you think about, especially fan sports, and you see people get emotionally drained about the results of their teams, right? Because they have this irrational connection to the outcome of these games. They're not a member of the Patriots team themselves. They put no effort whatsoever in building the season. Yet, at the same time, when they lose, they feel like it's a personal loss.
Right.
And I think that, at least Sean is suggesting, that we see the same type of fan reaction in the games community around certain things. So we thought we would use this podcast to talk about what some of those things might be, and whether or not, as Sean Sands suggests, we should just relax and take things a little bit less seriously sometimes.
Right. And, he points out that it's not just the... it's not just the lay fan. He cites some really, mean, just flat out mean articles by sports writers after the game, calling out specific players, Brady, you let your team down, Wes Welker, how come you couldn't catch a ball, I guess, I don't know what the right word, large voices in the community of football were basically taking the team to task in a pretty brutal way after they are the second best team in the league after all.
Yeah. The strange thing is, and he uses this word, I think, at some point, that it comes off as a bit of self-entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're almost suggesting that, they were intentionally not playing as hard as they could have? What exactly are you suggesting? I mean, I don't think that Wes Welker meant to drop a ball or fumble those catches. Right? He did his best.
Yeah.
And it seems so strange to me that some people would go, oh man, Welker, you're pathetic.
Yeah.
You've let us down. We had so many, we put so many of our hopes and dreams on your shoulders and you couldn't catch a lousy football thrown by an amazing quarterback. Like, come on now.
Yeah. So, I mean, the question becomes, where to draw the line for anger or righteous indignation, whatever you want to call it. And, the game space has plenty of its own examples of this type of thing.
Right.
So, I mean, do we want to approach it by... I mean, we could approach it by talking about some of our own personal indulgences. I have a couple. Or we could talk about it just more generally here with certain recent examples. Where do you want to start?
Let's go with some some specific examples that come to our minds, and then sort of go into, because I think that leads into whether or not people's reactions are justified, right? Because I think that sometimes people's reactions are justified and they should be mad about certain things.
Right.
And at other times, maybe Sands is right. So I think that it might help to suss out, well, what are the specific moments where at least we feel as though the reaction is legitimate?
Mm-hmm. So maybe we should start with one of the biggest franchises and one of the biggest part threes of a famous franchise that's coming out, and also something that every single time a big piece of news comes out about the game, there's a lot of weird anger, and that is Mass Effect 3.
Yes.
Mass Effect 3. See, I don't really have a horse in this race. You know, like I don't really play the Mass Effect series, so I kind of look at it as an outsider. But you're right in the thick of things, George.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to this game. And, you know, I reacted the same way a lot of other people did when they saw certain news coming out, specifically the Kinect controls, for example. Mm-hmm. When that first came out, people were like, this is ridiculous. Why include this in the game at all? It's completely unnecessary. And then you also saw a similar reaction when they announced the sort of multiplayer persistent component in the way that some of your multiplayer decisions, and even your decisions, oddly enough, in the iPhone and iOS sort of additional games will affect your single-player campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the two reactions are they're different, right? Because to one extent, I agree that there are serious concerns when we start messing around with multiplayer decisions and the way that it will affect your single-player experience, especially if you're someone who maybe doesn't enjoy multiplayer as much or you're missing out on that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that to some extent that reaction is legitimate, right? People have every right to be upset because, you know, I think what people are suggesting, maybe not so clearly, but that they said, look, I'm into this franchise and I'm excited about the third Mass Effect because of what was done right in Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2. And then they see something like this and they say that this defeats the purpose. You're going against what made the first two games great. And, you know, you had my trust and now maybe you don't have my trust anymore, right? That's kind of what people are applying.
Mm-hmm.
When people are talking about the Kinect issue, they're just complaining. That's all they're doing. If you don't have the Kinect, you can still play the game normally, right? You don't need the Kinect to experience everything that Mass Effect 3 has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the type of reaction, especially the heated reaction to the Kinect decision, I think was very much blown out of proportion.
It's weird because there are always, it's somewhat like stereotypes or rumors or something. Like there's usually some sort of glimmer of truth hidden in all the anger, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I mean, you know, you're to be strict about it. If you don't have a Kinect, you won't be able to utilize the voice input, which, you know, I mean, is probably not a huge deal, and it probably is more of a gimmick than anything else. But more to the point, the glimmer of rationality behind all of it is, why couldn't this just be a headset thing?
You're right. Right.
You know, so it's like, and that's kind of where you start down this path where it's like, oh yeah, that is true. They're trying to push Kinects. And pretty soon you're writing, you know, a vitriolic blog post or whatever about how BioWare is breaking into your house and stealing your wallet, you know?
Yeah. And the interesting thing is you're right in that you're running this borderline between, okay, mentioning a legitimate complaint and being so vehement about it, right? Being so hostile about it and taking it as a personal offense. Because if we were to say, yes, BioWare, probably requested by, you know, the great minds at Microsoft, are trying to get people to buy Kinect.
Yeah.
Okay, well, no surprise there, right? I mean, people, of course they want to sell Kinect. Is anyone surprised anymore by major publishers doing things to make a profit?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know.
Right, right. And that's where Sean's thing comes in. You know, it's like, it's one thing, it's a different thing to say, like, the players aren't trying hard enough in a football game. It's a different thing to just kind of accept the necessary, evil's a strong word, but kind of sleaziness of what happens behind the publishing and developing relationship.
I mean, this kind of comes up frequently in the topic of digital rights management and piracy and DRM. You get people who are openly hostile every time a game comes out with any form of DRM. And as I recall, even I think it was one of your New Year's resolutions, Scott, was to not buy into the pre-order bonuses, right, which themselves are a sort of a form of DRM,
oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this is a sort of in a similar vein where, okay, yes, it's idiotic and people are doing ridiculous that, you know, EA Origins is just a crapshoot. Things like that are terrible. That being said, are we really surprised? Can we really be as openly hostile as we are? Like, can we even sustain this sort of anger at publishers? Because they're not going to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, which is why, you know, the one response to vitriolic posts or whatever is just to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. But you bring up a good point where it's like, if no one says anything, then nothing really changes.
Right,
and so,
exactly.
And so in the pre-order example that you just brought up, my compromise was to just kind of stoically say, all right, I'm not going to get too angry or worked up about this. I'm just going to channel it into action. And the action is inaction. Like, I'm just not going to buy into all of the pre-order bonuses. Like if the Catwoman thing from Batman comes around again, something similar to that, just say no. Like, that's it. Like, vote with your wallet and do it.
Right.
But, I mean, for people who have the soapbox, it's hard to tell them not to use that, right?
For sure.
I mean, yeah. I have been guilty of that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
A while ago, I forget if it was a year or maybe even 2 years ago. Jesus, these years just fly by, George. Remember when Good Old Games pulled their weird publicity stunt?
that where they pretended that they were permanently gone, right?
Yeah. So I wrote a column on our website, pretty much taking them to task for it. And it was pretty similar to a lot of the other things people had written about it, but, and of course this isn't surprising since, you know, I wrote the thing, I feel like there was a legitimate reason behind why I wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
Good Old Games, not only, you know, they're, it's a crappy way to run your business by kind of jerking customers around, like making jokes about what they bought from you.
Right.
And secondly, they by their mission and their business, they have kind of, whether they wanted to or not, they put themselves in this position of stewardship almost of old games.
Right.
So it's like, when Charles Barkley in the 90s said, like, oh, I'm not a role model. You don't decide whether or not to be a role model. Just like if you are Good Old Games, you don't decide whether or not people will look at you as a historian almost.
Right.
So it's a disrespectful way to treat people, but it's also from a philosophical perspective, it's even sleazier.
Right.
And so I wrote a pretty angry post about that, not just because I think it's a bad business practice, but I think like there is a philosophy behind it that if we just speak out against it from like a capitalist perspective, like this is a bad way to manage money, you're losing part of what should actually be making you angry here.
Right. Well, I think that's a good point, though. And what you're suggesting, though, is that we have a sort of broader assessment of why things are bad when they are bad. So mm-hmm. instead of just parroting what everyone else has said on Twitter, actually, you know, making sure that the type of conversations that are being had are covering all of the major points. Both DRM and the Good Old Games example are sort of companies that are, it's their corporate practices that are that getting people upset.
Right.
I think we can look at something like balancing issues and patches that make changes, and those tend to rile up communities like nothing else.
Tell us about your League of Legends war stories, George.
Well, I mean, I was going to mention League of Legends, right? Because this is a game that is perpetually not done.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's the same with any multiplayer and persistent multiplayer community. These games are constantly getting patched for balance issues. League of Legends comes out with a new champion like every few weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people get upset when they get nerf certain characters and make them weaker, or alternatively, when they find a character that is still so overpowered that it sort of ruins the game for them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really difficult place to be in, because I think that people are right? You do want to point out to the designers, hey, look, this is something you might have overlooked, and you should take a look at this character again, because the game is broken, at least in terms of my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you know, they probably know that already. So I feel like for the most part, managing user reactions is really about balancing player expectations with what you think that you can adequately deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even though I agree with you, and I think that for the most part, people should be angry. If anything, they should be angry more often and be more vocal and articulate about why they're angry. At the same time, I think that companies should do a better job of changing the way that players expect to get what they expect or expect to get what they get, right? Like players, at least of League of Legends or of a lot of multiplayer games, feel like they're entitled to things because they've been told that they're entitled to things for so long.
Mm.
You know, like they're told, oh yeah, we're going to make this game perfect for you. This game is going to be great. Well, what if a multiplayer designer just came out and said, you know what, this game is going to be broken on launch and it's going to remain broken for the foreseeable future? Would people complain as much?
I don't know. That's one of the things that I see every once in a while. Like, I remember when Skyrim was coming out, and I said this. I wish people would have listened. I said this. Like, Skyrim is going to be broken for a good long time.
Yeah.
And up until basically this week when they released a patch, like, Skyrim was pretty busted up. But I don't really have much sympathy for the people kind of railing against it, because it's like, you know this. It's a Bethesda game. Like, come on, people. Like, do you not remember Fallout? Like, anything. Right. Just what happened? And so in that respect, I would, you know, that's where I lose patience with the people that write angry things about how broken their games are, when clearly you have no historical perspective at all. Like, you're not even primed to, you know, go into it with open eyes.
And to be fair, there are a lot of people who maybe received the game as a gift or something like that.
I am far more sympathetic to that. But the people I follow on Twitter tend to know about tend to know that Bethesda games are messed up on day one. And, I mean, you know, day 61. Like, it takes a long time. Like, it took them like a year to make sure Fallout was working correctly.
So the conversation we had last week about the industry's the clones of games, mm-hmm. right? And the way that Sprite Fox had their ideas stolen.
The Clone Wars.
The Clone Wars, if you will. I think that is sort of a comparable situation, in the sense that we take the sort of expectations that we have about the industry, and an event makes us realize, well, those expectations are kind of unfounded. That's not the way the industry works, and it hasn't worked that way for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sprite Fox thing is a perfect example of that, right? We have these expectations that publishers are going to be nice to each other. Well, really, that's ludicrous. There's nothing in the industry, and certainly nothing in the sort of larger economic system, that suggests corporations have to be nice to one another, right? Mm-hmm. That's not something that's all too common.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for day one patches, right? We are no longer in an industry where we can expect games to be perfectly designed and have no glitches or bugs whatsoever on launch. That those days are behind us.
Right.
So at what point do we just accept that, or do we carry our torch and maintain a sort of righteous indignation at day one patches for the foreseeable future?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you want from it. I mean, what I want from it is for publishers to back off and just, you know, let games come out when they're ready to come out. You know, right. Day one patches will go away if we are not as obsessed with release dates anymore.
Well, I like that, because then it's like, okay, well, instead of just being mad, let's find something to be mad at, right?
Yeah.
And this way it comes back to us, right? We're somewhat culpable in that. That we want these sort of day one releases. We get, and that's the funny thing. People get so pissed off when they push release dates back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you are shooting yourself in the foot here.
Yeah.
We cannot have it both ways.
Well, I was thinking about, you know, people are fickle, right? So I remember back in the day, gosh, I forgot which one it even was. It could have been Modern Warfare 2, or it could have been Black Ops, but there was controversy because they weren't going to allow dedicated servers anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so that created an internet petition. There was, you know, hundreds of thousands or however many there were people that was like, oh, we're going to boycott Modern Warfare. And then if you look at your Steam list on day one, everyone's playing Modern Warfare.
Well, the funny thing is, including people who are part of the boycott.
Exactly. Like, they definitely compared lists and were like, okay, well, you clearly bought Modern Warfare, even if you signed this list. So it's, I mean, people are fickle, right? Like, right. They want to let off steam and then, you know, have their game anyway.
Right. I mean, all that being said, I think that we are just as common to say we should quiet down and not complain so much,
right,
as it is to actually complain too much.
Right, right.
You know, at the end of his post, Sean says, it is okay to not be a champion for every cause, but just a person getting by who doesn't have all that much time to care about it, every little thing that happens in an entertainment industry, it is okay to just get over it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so quick to say that, because I think that in general, complaining, over complaining is annoying to some extent, but I'm not quite convinced that it's harmful in any way.
Well, this is where community management comes in. I'm thinking specifically about Uncharted 3 and Naughty Dog. They took an approach to people's criticisms of the aiming system and fixed the problem, basically. Mm-hmm. Like there were a group of fans that were just complaining about how the aiming had changed from Uncharted 2 to Uncharted 3, and they readily admitted that, you know, they had been working on the game for so long and they had made the tweaks so gradually that it's much harder to see that sort of thing from the inside until you release the game. And then once they did get the feedback, they reached out to a few of, you know, the top tier Uncharted people, brought them into the studio and worked with them to design an alternate control method for people that, you know, it allowed the people who wanted it to have an alternate control method, but it didn't overwrite the work that the developers did on the game as well. So it's like, like you were saying, if no one had been complaining about that, I mean, for me, I look at, if someone wrote that post, I just kind of shake my head and be like, whatever, man, like Uncharted felt okay to me, but clearly there was something up with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they hadn't complained, you know, they wouldn't have, the game would be worse off for it, basically.
And I think that, like you said, it's a community management issue, right? And like I said, in terms of expectations, it's sort of about how you open channels of communication. This is also about how we complain and what channels we use to voice those complaints.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to say, I'm going to go on Twitter and complain endlessly about this first day one patch.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'm going to look at the enthusiast press and see everybody cloning the same argument against this one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And another entirely to say, I'm going to go to this forum and find out why they made the decision that they did.
Right.
Or I'm going to email their community manager and tell them and voice my discontent.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some companies do it really well. Naughty Dog, that's a fantastic example. League of Legends does a couple of really things nice. One is they release their patch previews and let players know why they're making the decisions that they're making,
mm-hmm.
and what their goal is with that patch. So even if you don't like that patch in particular, you think it nerfs one of your champions, at least they made an effort to help you try to understand where they're coming from. And that sort of respect, mutual respect for each other, does wonders for forging a community that's not going to be complaining all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people do complain all the time, but, you know, to some extent, maybe we'll just always have those people.
Oh, sure. I mean, complaining is a great pastime. You should try it sometimes. It's just great.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something, you know, before we draw to a close, like I think there's a key distinction to make between having the angry posts about policy versus art.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've been talking a little bit about both, but just to draw a fine distinction, I think to be angry about the like dollars and cents issues is a little bit different than being angry about the artistic side of things. I'm thinking about, as an example, I'm thinking about all of the people who just slagged on The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker endlessly when they first debuted it.
Right.
And, you know, they called it Zelda because of like cel shading and stuff. And, you know, people always wanted their realistic Zelda. But now, you know, some years on, we look back on Wind Waker as one of the better Zelda games, and especially one that holds that stands up to the test of time visually.
Right.
And so if Nintendo had been reactionary and kind of changed something, well, I mean, you'd get a game like Twilight Princess, which looks nice, but it looks more generic.
Yeah.
And in 10 years, it'll look laughable because textures have gone past whatever it could do.
Right.
Whereas Wind Waker has this kind of eternal youthfulness because it's highly stylized, even though people complained bitterly about it when it first was released.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think it's also, it's a statement about when we complain.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that if you give it some time and you wait for the cacophony to die down a little bit, I think you'll find a bit more insight into why things work and don't work.
Mm-hmm.
This is the sort of same idea behind, you know, the Vintage Game Club or some of the other communities who play old games together or choose to look at and critique games that came out years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just hype, it's also the animosity towards those releases. You know, it's so interesting to me that we started with Mass Effect 3, and the game hasn't even come out yet. We have no idea right. if those things are going to work or not. The Kinect thing might be fantastic, and the multiplayer thing might be truly amazing. And we've already spent so much time that maybe our opinions of it are colored and are going to be colored and remain colored for some time
right.
based upon those sort of early issues that arise.
Yeah. And, you know, some of those issues on the other side are industry or financial issues. Like, there's now yet another Mass Effect 3 thing. You know, Jessica Chobot is now revealed to be a voice in Mass Effect 3. And people are irritated about that because she's a quasi-games journalist. So it's like, how does that color the coverage of G4 or the objectivity of reporting on BioWare things in general? Right. And I think complaining about something like that is fundamentally different than complaining about something artistic, because you're complaining about the process of creating something from a financial side of things rather than right. the personal taste of the artist, basically.
Right, right.
I don't know. I mean, I don't follow it that closely, and I definitely don't follow G4 and all that closely. So it doesn't really make any difference to me. But I could see why someone who is really invested in it would be irritated that there's this weird overlap between a supposedly objective public figure and now a cast member, basically.
Yeah, I mean, my femshep will probably just punch her in the face. So
just right trigger all the way.
Right trigger all the way. I mean, on the subject of those sorts of, I guess I want to also add that one of the things that I think people are rightly upset about are when developers do certain things that are offensive. And I think too often you get a sort of backlash against those complaints of people who are like, oh, why are you mad? Yes, of course, David Jaffe was being sexist.
Yeah.
Who cares? You're not buying the game for David Jaffe's opinion.
Right.
Or who cares about BioWare's offensive Facebook contest to decide right. what Shepard Femshep looks like?
You know, or how about the Modern Warfare fags debacle that was?
Yeah, and you get backlash against it. So if anything, I want to be like, yeah, be pissed and be more pissed and be right. vocal about it. Be logical about it, sure.
Yeah.
You know, be well spoken about it and make sure that the conversation is diverse. But at the same time, like I'm not going to side with anyone who says, oh well, who cares? This doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean we're tiptoeing right up to the border of. It's just a game territory.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then, you know, if there's one thing that we try to stay away from personally on our website is that it's just a game mentality, because, you know, I mean, if we thought that, why would we be doing all this stuff, you know?
Right. But this is just a podcast.
So. This is just a podcast. So whatever. You're just going to delete this anyway. Write an angry post about it. Shall we wrap it up before we get too enraged?
Yes.
ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address if you want to send us any hints, feedback, tips, anything.
We would also love to hear what gets you angry and what sort of angry trends do you try to stay away from. The comment section you can find at experiencepoints.net. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings. We're also over on popmatters.com, so come by and check that site out as well. There's plenty of writers. The Pop Matters podcast does things. I was on there recently, in fact.
Join in the noise and the fury.
Join in the noise and the fury. And leave a review on iTunes for us.
All right. Until next time, everyone. Thanks for listening. Take it easy.
Bye-bye. Every time.